You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Hello, comrades. This is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I wanted to start by apologizing for not being here the last 2 days. I was invited over the weekend to go up to the great state of Michigan and to be able to give a presentation at a conference last minute. And, you know, my wife's family is partially from Michigan, so we had some family times that delayed us returning home for the show, and I deeply apologize about that, but, you know, faith, family, and then folk. So that was a great opportunity, you know, especially for the two kiddos that we have to get to see their family. So I appreciate the understanding, of course, from all my dear listeners on that. But now we're back to normal for the rest of the week. So I'm happy to be here, and to join me is the one, the only, Mr. Florian Geyer. Florian, how are you doing on this fine morning?
I'm doing excellent, my friend. I'm deeply honored, as always, to be back on Daily Traditionalist, and you always kind of flatter me with these high praises.
Well, you know, speaking of high praises, I think you are doing something that is incredibly important. Before we go on, you know, for maybe the listeners where there isn't a full crossover, but there should be listening to your show, you want to talk a little bit about the spiritual warfare element and the prayer discord that you guys have going on before we get into the news, because I think that's so important for people to know about and get involved in.
Yeah, well, the focus of my podcast, Mysterium Fasces, is trying to integrate the Christian, Orthodox Christian worldview with an active national socialist political life. And so what this basically means is spiritual warfare, because our worldview is spiritual. And so our struggle against our physical enemies is always preceded by our struggle first against ourselves to gain self-mastery, but against our invisible enemies as well. And so to this end, another Orthodox Christian and myself, we have started a prayer server on Discord where we're keeping morning and evening prayer rules, as all Orthodox Christians should be doing, and we're helping people get deeper into their prayer life. We're praying for listed prisoners and so on, members of our community who are ill, and we are actively engaging in spiritual maneuvers, so to speak, against our enemies. And so it's lifting for the soul, essentially, is what it is. And everybody says that if you are in the far right and you're not lifting, you know, you have no place here. And I would say that if you're in the far right and you're not praying, it's basically much the same, more important.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's really what kicks in. I mean, because we have to understand our enemies, you know, to understand the Jews as the premier enemy that we're facing. That it's not just about, you know, physical force. I mean, obviously the Jews are you know really primarily physically weak in a lot of ways, but they use subversion and they use the tactics of our enemy, Satan, to be able to subvert. I mean, whether it's pornography, whether it's the food they're giving you, whether it's just the ideas that are planted in our head by the Jewish media, by the Jewish school system. I mean, all of this is subversion, and you need to be able to have that armor of God to be able to put that on, to be able to resist. We need to be able to resist these temptations. We need to be able to resist everything that's thrown at us, because if we can't do that, they're just going to drag us down in the muck. And if spiritually we cannot overcome the Jews, then we're never going to be able to physically do it. I mean, this is a struggle where, of course, we must be physically active. You can't just go in your prayer corner all day. This must be a practicing faith where you're active in the real world. But religion and faith is a huge part of this, because if you're not guarding yourself spiritually, then you're missing out on the largest amount of allies you could possibly have. I mean, Kadriano talked about this extensively, about how prayer is the most important weapon in this struggle, because it allows you to call upon your ancestors. It allows you to call upon all of the saints. It allows you to call upon the power of God to connect you with something greater than yourself, to smash evil. Our enemies are not just people we disagree with. They're absolute evil. They are the embodiment of Satan on this earth, as Jesus Christ himself said, that they are of their father, the devil. That is who we are facing. It's not just about their bodies. It's also about their spirits. We need to be able to defeat them spiritually and physically. So I would just encourage everyone, and maybe Sven can throw some deets up about the prayer discord in the show notes, because I think this is so important what you're doing, and we need to get everyone involved in it. But on to news, speaking of how Jews are. Esquire did a story about the secretive family making billions from the opioid crisis. Now, what's interesting is the first issue of Action, the Traditionalist Worker Party's official party paper, the front story was actually about this very topic. But of course, we identified right from the get-go that this is a Jewish family, the Sacklers. And really, this article is very extensive, and it talks about all the money, the billions of dollars that they have. It says here in the article that they have an oath as a family, never comment publicly on the source of the family's wealth, just like the mafia does. They are conservatively, this family is pegged as having a conservative $14 billion in the bank. That's not their company, that's them. $14 billion. And this comes from OxyContin, the narcotic painkiller regarded by many public health experts as the most dangerous product ever sold on a mass scale. Since 1996, when the drug was brought to the market by Purdue Pharma, the American branch of the Sacklers pharmaceutical empire, more than 200,000 people in the United States have died from overdoses of OxyContin and other prescription painkillers. Thousands more have died after starting on a prescription opioid, then switching to a drug with a cheaper street price, such as heroin. Not all these deaths are related to OxyContin. Dozens of other painkillers, including generics, have flooded the market in the past 30 years. Nevertheless, Purdue Pharma was the first to achieve a dominant share of the market for long-acting opioids, accounting for more than half the prescriptions by 2001. And, I mean, this continues a long, long way about this family. But you've got a bunch of Jews that are involved in marketing, and they realize that something a little bit better than marketing films is marketing synthetic heroin, getting involved in the pharmaceutical industry. And these pharmaceutical Jews teamed up with the Hollywood Jews to be able to change laws. Of course, now you can advertise medications to patients, and you can basically bribe doctors into writing the right type of scripts. And it creates this incestuous relationship with Jews Jewing everybody except themselves, between the FDA, which of course is filled every single year with pharmaceutical company folks. You know, it's kind of like Congress. You get to go become a lobbyist. You get involved in the FDA, being put with the producers of the drugs, you know, like synthetic heroin, which is OxyContin, put together with the marketing Jews that are able to get this out there on your televisions, on your radios, into bribing doctors with trips to Cancun or even just a decorative pen to be able to give this synthetic heroin to your neighbors. And they've amassed billions of dollars off of the death and suffering of our people on a drug they knew was highly addictive. But they said they lied. They said it wasn't. And then now we've lost over 200,000 people, adding thousands more that have died of heroin overdoses. These are some of the largest mass murderers in American history. And they're currently living in mansions spread throughout the United States and around the world. So, Florian, I've chit-chatted for a minute here, but I just get so upset because this issue with the opioid crisis affects my community, affects so many of the, you know, the communities that we have, affects our comrades. I mean, one of our comrades just a few weeks ago had a cousin die of a heroin overdose. And a few weeks before that, another party comrade I knew had a cousin die. I mean, this is the sort of thing that has impacted all of us in such a strong way and is tearing apart the white working class community. And these Jews are making untold profits off of our suffering. So give me a holler on what you think on this.
Well, yeah, as you say, the viciousness of this attack is that it does not just kill the body of our brethren, but it destroys their soul, and that they become servants to the god of opium, and they worship and bow down before the idol of heroin. And this is kind of the ultimate end goal of the passions. If you want to see what the effect of women is on you, given lack of self-control, it's the same as heroin. And so that's why the Jews use both of these tactics in order to control and manipulate us. And I just pose forward for you gentlemen, a man who is enslaved to his passions, you know, he can have 150 IQ, but if he's addicted to OxyContin, that's where all of his IQ is going. And so I would say that beyond this, we don't realize this on the surface, but this is a long-standing policy of both British imperialists and of Jews. Jews go back far, far into history as notorious international drug dealers. And they don't have any preference, whether it's cheap vodka in the Ukraine to the point where all of the Ukrainian taverns in the 16th and 17th century were owned by Jews, and the Cossacks were going around and beating up these Jews and extracting rent from them because they were poisoning people with cheap spirits and so on, or whether it's Oxycontin now, or whether it was the British Empire's backed by the Sassoon, the Jewish Sassoon banking clan out of India, who flooded China with opium. The very same thing.
And this, Florian, you're hitting at such an important point that this has been used before. I mean, the strategy, our enemy isn't actually as creative as he likes to appear. He plays off of the vices. And this goes into why spiritual warfare is so important, because they know what vice is. They know what vices speak to us, whether it's women, whether it is drugs, whether it's chasing that high, you know, whether it's alcoholism, whether it's rage, you know, anger, giving controlled outlets for it. You know, having sports to be able to distract our, it's not really a vice, but our instinctive tribal nature. I mean, they understand human psychology in a very effective way. But I mean, the example of the Sassoon family in China is absolutely, this is what we're dealing with. I mean, going in and using then the arm of the British army to force the people onto opium. I mean, that's what it came down to. I mean, the people were rebelling against having opium being flooded in to keep their people sedentary and weak as they were absolutely raped by the British Empire. And I mean, what do we have here? I mean, drugging up our people. The people have the most revolutionary potential are white working class people, are the people that have nothing left to lose. And they're the ones who have been had for two decades, three decades, having synthetic heroin and then real heroin pumped in their communities to keep them, you know, complacent, to keep them, you know, really under control. I mean, just like the opium dens in China historically, now we're looking at the pill dens, you know, having these flop houses where people are dealing pills and taking them and ruining an entire two generations of youth and tearing apart families and getting everyone so hooked on these things that they don't know which way is up, which allows them to have their communities and their nation be destroyed. I mean, this is the same insidious nature, this destructive nature of the Jews, of what they're pushing. And I was surprised, to be totally honest. Like, you know, I always want, I don't know if you have the same thing, but I always want it to not be the Jews, not because I don't, you know, loathe them, but because like it feels like you're in an echo chamber sometimes where it's like something horrible happens and then you look and you're like, oh, yeah, that's a Jewish name behind it. You know, sometimes I just like to have things be shaken up a little bit. And I was like, the pharmaceutical industry, that sounds like a decently sort of maybe implicitly white waspy thing. No. It's just Jews from top to bottom that have been involved in this opioid epidemic that is a silent genocide against our people. I mean, it absolutely, you know, it's those moments where you're just like, no, like literally Mel Gibson was right. They are the cause of all the world's problems.
And it's even more intense when you're reading history and you find Jews lurking in shadows that you had absolutely no idea about. I remember one time I talk smack about the heretic Jan Hus of Prague, who's from the 16th century or 15th century on this podcast. And somebody got really mad at me. But Jan Hus, who looted all of the monasteries in Prague and destroyed the richest part of Europe at the time, was supported by all of the Jewish moneylenders of Prague to rebel against the church in Rome. Of course, we're both Orthodox, but we rebel against the church in Rome because the Jews could seize the monastic property.
Say it isn't so, Florian. Say it isn't so.
Well, you see that, Heibach. It's imperative. It's tikkun olam. It's about healing the world. If we don't fix the world, the goyim will continue to degenerate it with their ridiculous concepts of order and beauty and truth.
We just have to destroy it all. You understand. Everything's got to go.
Everything must be broken down into the Ein Sof. Then the new Messiah will arise. Adam Kadmon will rebuild the third temple in Jerusalem.
Oh, man. They really think that, though. And they're really trying to destroy the entire world in order to bring this stuff about. I mean, that's the sad thing, Florian. Like, as I'm sitting here and you're thinking about, like, the destruction of the environment, the destruction of our people, the murder of the unborn, the homosexuality, the having trannies and five horns reading books to school children. Like, I mean, all this stuff is literally they want to, I mean, you know, because they've got a very selective sort of thing. Like, they want to heal the world and be good for, you know, all mankind. Well, they think they're the only human ones on this planet. But, like, they really do want to crash the plane with no survivors, with consequences for billions of people be damned, in order to remake and terraform the world in the image of Satan himself. I mean, that's not an exaggeration. That's what they're actually doing, of trying to pervert everything that's good and holy to then make it in their master's own image. I mean, and it sounds crazy when you just like saying it out loud, but like you really think about it, that's what these Jews are doing. It's horrifying. You know, scarier than any, you know, it's October, people are watching horror movies. Scarier than any horror movie you'll ever watch is understanding like the Kalergi plan. That's the real horror story.
Well, and the scary part is that Harold Quigley writes in his Anglo-American Establishment that the Kalergi plan was presented to these Clive Dinsett Milner Anglo-Jewish Protestant bankers in London in the 1920s.
Yeah, it's yeah. Almost and like so there just, was a reason for World War II. Hmm.
Listen, the purpose of the 20th century was not to destroy Germany or Russia. This is a conspiracy theory.
Even though there were Jews behind all of it.
It's just hey, no, like, please go ahead. The thing about it is, on Mysterium Fasci, we talk, like, I make caveats a lot where I explain to our listeners that we don't try not to talk in hyperbole, and we try not to use like inflammatory language. And so, like, when we say that the Jews are satanic, or we talk about what their theological end goal is, what their philosophy is, we're not, you know, playing it up to be, you know, propagandistic and inflammatory. Like, these Jews really do think these things, and they really admit it openly. And you can go and check out Mysterium Fasces, where we talked about the Kabbalah and the foundations of Freemasonry and so on, where we extensively detail the historically recorded underpinnings and guys who were involved in shaping these worldviews. It's just a fact. I mean, if we want to talk about empirical science, every single member of the Royal Society of London, which founded the modern English, you know, Enlightenment scientific method, was a Freemason.
Yep. Well, I mean, the Masonic element is one thing that isn't talked about enough in our movement, for certain reasons. I think we both know. And we need to understand history. To understand the current predicament, the current situation, one must go back to history, because history, I mean, if it doesn't repeat itself, it at the very least echoes very, very strongly. I mean, who, you know, doesn't think here in the United States? I mean, here we are 100 years after the Bolshevik Revolution, coming up on November 4th. We're going to be looking at what's going on across the Western world. We have, once again, anarchists and communists being led by their Jewish masters, trying to tear down Western civilization. We have the establishment that is weak and tired and has lost the faith of the people. I mean, even elections like that of Donald Trump showed the people are tired of politics as usual. Less than a century after the 1920s and 30s and the 40s, we're headed back for another round of the battle between nationalism and globalism. As Dietrich Eckart said, this is a struggle between Christ and Antichrist. Things always repeat themselves, Florian. I mean, the drugs that you see, you know, occupying China, or that's happening in the hollers of West Virginia and Appalachia. I mean, all these things, they constantly repeat in this cycle of history. And we're on the right side of history, because we're the ones that are based on truth, on the word of God, on what the traditions actually are supposed to be. And it is intense, though. I mean, this is kind of off script before we get to our next topic of Hurricane Spencer coming into Florida. I mean, what do you think, here that we're coming on the 100th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution, what this means in terms of symbolism and kind of where we are in the cycle of life?
In our parish, we just put up a new icon of St. Vladimir of Kiev, who was the first martyr by the Bolsheviks. He was killed 100 years ago this year. Next year, we're coming up on the 100th anniversary of the last death of the last emperor anointed in the Holy Spirit, Tsar Nicholas II. And so I think that for the Jews, for them, this is an incredibly, incredibly poignant moment, just as the 100th, you know, after the 100th anniversary of the French Revolution, this was when the revolutionary fervor began to increase in intensity to its maximum peak. And so I think that, yeah, I mean, we're coming to a sort of satanic synaxis, so to speak. We're drawing on the confluence of their victory over Orthodox Christian Russia. And so I think that, you know, this is the thing. I remember when I started reading about the Red Terror, and it hit me. I began to think, I'm like, how is it possible that these bourgeois Christians think that this is not going to happen to them? Less than 100 years ago, right? I mean, they didn't, you know, the Bolsheviks didn't care if you were a liberal Christian.
Yeah, or if you just want to stay out of politics.
It's just, you know, the takeaway is that, like, listen, we're 100 years out only from the Russian Revolution. It's breathing on our necks. And so anybody who doesn't think this is literally the circumstance that we're in right now, that we're in a pre-revolutionary stage, that we're basically Russia right before World War I, you know, is fooling themselves.
Well, and this goes into another one of the stories we talked about before we started the show. George Soros just moved $18 billion to his foundation, which of course has spread to plenty of open borders, but also really insidious. I mean, basically, when we say that he funds Antifa, I don't mean that there's like, you know, a Jewish guy going up to some random heroin flop house in like Detroit to be like, you know, here's your money. Like, but no, like they create these organizations that fight hate, that fight nationalism, that fight traditional Christianity, that promote false ecumenism and things like that. And it all filters down. I mean, it really is kind of like trickle down economics, whether it's the influence within the media, whether it's, you know, these open foundations that go to war essentially with organizations like us. You know, whether it's to influence in trade unions that have been turned away from being fighting for working people and instead fighting for the Jewish oligarchs that are hurting working people. I mean, all of this, I mean, the fact that guy is putting $18 billion aside into his foundation, I mean, I don't think that's necessarily an accident. I don't think he's like, well, taxes are coming up. I gotta move some money around. I mean, that seems like a very specific act if you want my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of people who throw $16 billion around every day. I would tend to agree with you. And I think things are heating up. I think things are falling into place, and the divides within all of the Western society are becoming more intense. My only concern is I truly, truly hope and pray to God that we don't end up like the White Russians in the revolution, where you had the far right was destroyed inside because of the Masonic factionalism. You had the Black Hundreds Party, who could have been the counter-revolutionary vanguard defending the Tsar, but because of the internal subversion from the guys who went off and left, made the Cadet Party, which was the Masonic Party, they ended up essentially as the far-right opposition to the Tsar, which gained them the enmity of St. John of Kronstadt, who had supported them initially. And so my fear for us is that the North American far-right is in a similar position, where we have a consolidated force because of our enemies, but I fear that internally we will be split between a Masonic racist liberal faction, which will eventually be proved to be neutered, ultimately at the behest of the moneyed interests and mercantilists who support them, and there's going to be a traditionalist sort of pro-Christian faction as its opposition. And this is, of course, what they desire. They desire to split us down the middle so that we can't fight in solidarity. The problem is that people are free, and so they can elect to go along with the plans of our enemies if they so desire.
Well, yeah, I mean, hitting on that, I think, is so important. I mean, let's look at the so-called far right, as the media would say, of America, or you know, Western Europe, but mostly America. We've got the militia types, the patriot groups, of which, you know, there are plenty of people involved in these. Just go to a gun show and see, you know, people lined up for days. So that sort of thing. But they want to defend the Masonic, Judeo-Masonic underpinnings of the Enlightenment of America. So, all right, they're not on our side. They might hate Antifa. They might, you know, not like Black Lives Matter, but they're still defending the barricades of the institutions. So they're not on our side. The racist liberal wing of the alt-right is fundamentally opposed to us because it's intrinsically materialist. It's like, I don't want black people in my Starbucks. And that is not a traditionalist or a nationalist perspective, because if we lived in an all-white country, we talked about this on the last episode of Mysterium Fasces. I would still be doing what I'm doing. I know you would too, because a secular, materialist, radically individualist country is not a nation. And it is spiritually destructive. It is destructive to the family. It's destructive to the nation as a whole, of the people's community. So their intrinsically, their values are opposed to us. And it really just comes down to those that fall onto our spectrum, where National Socialism is the only political philosophy that is the application of natural law. And our faith is so crucial to understand how we can transcend the material and the selfish personal desires into something greater than ourselves. It really is us alone when it comes to this movement. We can't rely on Republicans to rally around our flag. No, they would be the ones like cheering the Black Hawk helicopters that would, you know, come and like burn our children alive, you know, because that's America and our president's got big balls. Like, I mean, that's like what they would be doing. And the racist liberals are intrinsically tied to their money, to their status, that even if they're being rebelling somewhat against the system, they just want a better seat at the table. They don't want to flip the table over like Christ did when you come in and you see the use and the abuse and what the Jews are doing. You can't get a seat at the table. You can't, you know, be in the temple and I'm going to make some money too. You know, I just want to have more access to the free market. No, you got to knock the table over and drive them out of the temple. That's the only path forward.
Yeah, this is it precisely. And I mean, it's the interesting, I'll make a caveat here about the temple, and then perhaps we should press on to Hurricane Spencer. Most people don't, for instance, the merchants at the temple set up their wares because people would come from all over the world in order to come to pilgrimage and sacrifice to the one true God at the temple in Jerusalem. And so what they were doing is they were engaging in like a necessary service, right? And that's how they, Jews always pass themselves off. Well, you know, I mean, you need to buy the bulls, the heifers, the sacrifice. They can't just bring them with them from Abyssinia. And that is always the excuse for blaspheming the name of God, because the cover, the sneakiness, the excuse always turns into this usury. They institutionalize not themselves in the temple, but their father, the devil. And this is the great desecration which led to the destruction of the temple. It was that the priests worshiped God with their mouths, but not with their hearts.
Yeah, no, you're 100% correct on that. Well, as we're coming to the end of the show, I want to just talk real briefly. We could talk about this a lot, and we should in a future episode. But Richard Spencer is coming to speak in Florida, and the governor has already declared a state of emergency for that county before Spencer has even touched a single inch of Florida soil. And everyone's losing their minds. They're spending $500,000 of security costs just so Richard Spencer can come and speak his mind. If we're talking about a pre-revolutionary period in America, when it takes $500,000 worth of cops to allow someone to say stuff that some of the students disagree with, things are kind of a powder keg. So I really want to get your thoughts on Spencer coming to Florida and what this means about American politics, especially on college campuses.
Well, here's the way basically I think it's going to play out. I think that people are going to find that the tactics that they take of appealing to the goodwill of the regime to support their free expression of speech are going to fail them. Now, most of these guys know that, but they're trying to set themselves up as like a Martin Luther King. And I'm just going to say, well, like, listen, you know, that's not how it's going to, you know, fly and shake out. The reason why the governor has called the state of emergency is because now that there's a state of emergency, he can use his executive powers to declare martial law and to suppress free speech, suppress the regular functioning of police forces in the area should he decide to. And so essentially what he's done is he's waived Richard Spencer's First Amendment right to freedom of political speech. Now, my point here is that this is going to keep happening. It's going to happen, keep happening, and they're not going to just waive your right to free speech. Like in Charlottesville, they're going to allow our enemies to attack us, or like with Rockwell, the police are just going to attack us straight up, and it's going to get to the point where Antifa are getting into gunfights with us, you know, and we have no protection from the authorities. I don't say this because it's speculation. I say this because this is what happened in Germany, and this is what has happened in this country before. In the 60s, Rockwell stormtroopers were going on and fighting every night. Every night. And so we're not even close to how spicy things are going to get yet. And I think it's closer than people think.
Well, and you hit, I think, the most important thing is the state is now just looking for any excuse because it's legalizing the heckler's veto. If you can just declare a state of emergency anytime we're going to march or hold a speech or, I mean, God, if you get to the point handing out leaflets, you know, I mean, the you know, the comrades that are alleged to have formerly been members of National Action, as we talked about before, you know, being arrested for apparently having like stickers as terrorist material. I mean, this is what we're getting into in the United States, where if any time the left threatens to bring violence, that then can allow our event to be canceled when we're not the violent ones. We're just trying to spread our ideas. Then the First Amendment doesn't exist. It's gone. It's already gone. And it's going to be decided here in the next few months, I think. And there is a lot of momentum behind this push against the First Amendment, against freedom of speech, because they're scared of our ideas. And then that gives, that emboldens the left to let them know that if they use violence and intimidation, they will not be cracked down on. Instead, they will be legitimized by having the power of the state go behind them to be able to silence us and shut us down. I mean, this is why, as I've said before, do not chant Blue Lives Matter. Do not, you know, say that, oh, we just want to reform this system. This system is diametrically opposed to our continued survival, to our ability to speak, and to our lives. I mean, this is what they're fundamentally doing. They're trying to silence us in every single regard. The far left, the corporations, and the political power work hand in hand with one another to advance the interests of an anti-white, anti-Christian, New World Order sort of agenda. So, Florian, as we've come to the end, give us a final thought to send our dear listeners off.
Codriano said that victory is not determined by who bears the force of arms, but by who can secure the alliance and help of the heavenly spirits and the souls of our ancestors in battle. And so, while we have to act in the same manner our ancestors did, fight without fear and fight until we die, this is where the true fight originates.
Amen. Well, you know, I mean, as we know from the scriptures and the words of the saints, that, you know, the spear and rod can be crushed by God. And no matter what they have, we are on his side. We are on the right side. We have the power of the saints behind us, the power of Christ, the power of Saint Michael the Archangel and all the angels that will guarantee that, you know, while we might die in our mortal bodies, our souls shall be immortal, and that we shall be victorious in the struggle, because evil will not triumph. Good will always win out, you know, even if it takes some time, and we're on the right side. So, Mr. Florian Geyer, host of Mysterium Fasces, thank you so much for being here, as always, my friend. Looking forward to chatting soon. And thank you to my dear listeners for everything. Looking forward to being back tomorrow with another edition of The Daily Traditionalist. So I hope everyone has a great day. God bless you all, and hail victory.
Listening to The Daily Traditionalist on Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.